Bigfoot, Nessie, Chupacabra. Are these and other purported monsters the real deal? Or are they really not more than a fantasy of those who want to believe? We'll ask those questions on The Cryptid Report. Welcome to The Cryptid Report. I am Jim Harold, and so glad to be with you once again. And we have a fascinating discussion. We are going to talk about the Lake Michigan Mothman, high strangeness in the Midwest. And our guest is Tobias Wayland, and he is the author of that book, The Lake Michigan Mothman, High Strangeness in the Midwest. And Tobias has been investigating the strange and unusual for over a decade. But it was a series of formative paranormal events incorporating elements associated with hauntings, nighttime visitations, and alien abduction as a young child that first drew his interest to the anomalous. The first several years of his investigative career were spent as a MUFON field investigator, and then in independent investigation. He then went on to become the editor and head writer for the Singular Fortean Society. Tobias is a frequent guest on many podcasts and radio shows. He was featured in the Small Town Monsters documentary, Terror in the Skies, and he has contributed to several books on the paranormal. He is also a popular speaker at conferences and events. Tobias, what a background. Very interesting. Thank you for coming on the show today to talk about the Lake Michigan Mothman.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
So I can't let your bio pass without asking you, you know, what the paragraph, I mean, very impressive CV. You've done a lot of different things. But this series of formative paranormal events as a child, that I said, I have to ask about that. So maybe you tell it before we get into the Mothman, let's talk a little bit about those events and what got you into all of this.
Sure. So some of my oldest memories as a kid were of being terrified to go to bed every night, honestly, because I knew when I did, as often as not, something was going to happen. And that could mean, you know, well, for instance, you know, I was so scared to go to bed that often I would sleep with the covers over my head, and I would feel phantom hands sort of buffeting the blanket as I had it over, or I would feel again these phantom hands like digging into my ribs. You know, like if you've ever had somebody try to tickle you in the ribs, but very, very forcefully, painfully, really. And you know, I would often see strange things. I think they're most popularly known as shadow people now, but I didn't know what to call them back then. And that wasn't always just at bedtime. I would just see them, you know, maybe duck behind a corner or just around, frankly. And it was in my early 20s, actually, where I had one of my most startling experiences, wherein I woke up one night, and it was the middle of the night, and I remember looking around, and we lived out in the suburbs of Sun Prairie, Wisconsin, if anybody's familiar with that. And you know, there was some ambient light coming in through the window, so I could see around my bedroom pretty well. And, you know, all of the normal furniture and stuff was there. I could see my dresser and my bookshelves and everything. And there were a couple of things that I noticed immediately. One is that my vantage point was pretty strange because it appeared that I was floating several feet off of my bed. And the other was that immediately to my left was one of these shadowy figures that I had been seeing. And whatever it was, I got the distinct impression that I probably wasn't supposed to be awake. And so while I could move, I mean, I turned my head to look. That's how I saw it in the first place. So while I could move, I decided very quickly that it probably wasn't a very good idea for me to move. Because again, it felt like I was interrupting something. And so I look over at this thing, and it reaches out its hand, and I can still feel it to this day. It reaches out its hand and puts it on my chest, like almost comfortingly. And I'm lowered back down to my bed, and then it vanished. And that's not everything that I've ever experienced, but I mean, that's a quick overview. And so there are elements in there that, you know, some people might say relate most to a haunting. You know, certainly there's nighttime visitation. And, you know, most people hear that story about, you know, waking up floating over my bed and like to relate that to the abduction phenomenon. I think there's a lot of overlap between those things. And that's something that I've learned through my own experiences. But also, you know, when I was growing up, you know, it was pre-internet. And so my exposure to the, you know, field of research for this stuff was by going to the library. I'd literally ride my bike over to the library in town, and I would pick up books by, you know, like Lauren Coleman, Brad Steiger, John Keel. And it was by reading those guys that I was able to start to process what was happening to me. And those books and those authors let me know that I wasn't alone, and they really helped. And so as I got older, I decided that I wanted to help. You know, there had to be a way that I could give back, that I could investigate and help people process these things, you know, similarly to how all of these fantastic authors have helped me. And so that, you know, that was really my motivation to get into this.
Now, this particular topic. Now, we talked to Lon Strickler, for example, about it. Mm-hmm. And many people who are deep into these things are probably generally at least familiar with the sightings. But if somebody is not, can you talk about this wave of sightings of Mothman?
Sure. So are you asking specifically about the sightings that sort of ostensibly began in Chicago?
Yeah, that whole kind of flap, that whole kind of wave. So if somebody's new to this topic and say, oh, I didn't know that Mothman was in Chicago, just a general description of kind of the series of sightings.
Sure, definitely. So in the spring of 2017, a trio of sightings came through the Mutual UFO Network, and they each described similar flying, like large flying creatures. I believe all three of them actually, well, two of them described a giant bat or huge bird-like creature. One of them literally used the word Lacusa, which is a witch that can turn into a large bird from Mexican folklore. And I personally saw those trio of sightings come through the case management system, and thought it would make an interesting article for the Singular Fortean Society. And so, you know, I followed up with Sam Maranto, who is the state director of MUFON for Illinois. And, you know, he didn't have a lot of contact with those witnesses. Frankly, those first three sightings, the investigation, it's very underwhelming in that there wasn't much follow up that was had. They weren't really able to dig into those very much. So I think if those were the only three sightings that we had reported, I mean, this would have ended up in my shrug file, and I would have just moved on. But that's not what happened. You know, I published my article. You know, obviously Lon Strickler over at Phantoms and Monsters published it. Manuel Navarette over at UFO Clearinghouse also published it. And as soon as that happened, these reports started flooding in. And initially they were coming in mostly to UFO Clearinghouse and Phantoms and Monsters. And so, you know, I was covering paranormal news for the Singular Fortean Society, and so I decided I needed to dig into this. Obviously, I mean, I'm only 2 hours north of Chicago, so this was particularly interesting to me. And you know, so I I called Manuel and was able to interview him. I was able to interview Lon, and we talked a lot about what was going on. And these reports kept flooding in, and I was introduced more officially to Lon and them through a mutual friend, and he asked me if I'd like to help investigate these sightings because I was so close, and they were spreading out. So these sightings, again, ostensibly began in Chicago in 2017. But as time went on, you know, sure, we got plenty of reports from that area, but the reports also spread out, and they spread out in two ways, geographically, but also temporally. So we had reports, now in 2019, we've got reports from every state bordering Lake Michigan, but we also have reports going back as far as 1969. And so what sort of emerged out of this is not just this localized cryptid event in Chicago, but rather this ongoing series of flying humanoid sightings all around Lake Michigan that appears to have been happening for decades.
Very, very interesting indeed. Now, when we think of Mothman, we think of Silverbridge, we think of Point Pleasant, we think of that late 60s, I think it might have been 67, if I'm remembering correctly, the sightings of Mothman, the Mothman prophecies, the collapse of the bridge, the tragedy, the loss of life. What about the Chicago area sightings maps to that and is similar? And what are some of the things that are dissimilar?
Sure. So, I mean, there are quite a few similarities. I think that part of the issue with people recognizing those similarities is how much the lore surrounding the 66 to 67 Point Pleasant sightings has been manipulated throughout the decades, especially since the advent of the internet. So if you go back and you know, read the, you know, John Keel's Mothman Prophecies, for instance, like you'll hear people talk about something that sounds, well, basically the same as what people are describing around Lake Michigan. You don't get a 100% similar description among each and every witness. Like, you don't get that from the Point Pleasant witnesses, because there's always going to be some variation. That's just human perception. But what you get is people using the exact same bird and bat-like descriptors in the Point Pleasant sightings that you get from the people reporting things around Lake Michigan. You've got people also reporting, of course, the glowing red eyes, although glowing red eyes, interestingly enough, like that sort of runs the gamut from everything from Bigfoot to Dogman sightings to Mothman. So that's sort of an interesting descriptor that we just see a lot all of the time. Although, again, like, it's something that you do see between Point Pleasant and Lake Michigan. If I could address the Silver Bridge collapse, actually. Yes. Now, I'm one of those people that somewhat heretically doesn't think that the collapse of the Silver Bridge actually really had anything to do with the Mothman sightings in Point Pleasant. I don't think there's a lot of evidence to correlate those events, really. So if you look at even back then, what John Keel was saying about his experience. So now, he did think that some disaster was going to happen due to the mysterious messages that he had been receiving from whomever. But he thought that the particular disaster was going to be a widespread blackout along the East Coast. And so when the Silver Bridge tragically collapsed in December of 1967, I think it provided for people the one thing that we're always looking for. which is an ending to the story. There's nothing people love more in life that is delivered less than a neat, tidy narrative. And the Silver Bridge, it gave people the ending to that narrative, and it allowed them to begin to make sense maybe of what had been happening. It gave them a reason for Mothman to be there. I just think it was a very convenient sort of event, and that people clung to that, and I don't blame them, but I think the evidence of any correlation is actually pretty weak. And then of course with the Mothman Prophecies movie coming out, and the writers for that movie adding just a slew of fictional events in that movie, you know, where Mothman supposedly showed up and predicted some tragedy. I think the one that got the most traction, and Lauren Coleman very helpfully, you know, pointed this out years ago now, was the Blackbird of Chernobyl, which is an urban legend in the true sense. I don't think anybody's ever been able to ever actually trace that back to an eyewitness or an actual source or anything. So I think that, well, right now the biggest similarities are in the description of the creature, the fact that people are also reporting other anomalous phenomena in the same area. So much like people were reporting, you know, huge birds and UFOs and things around Point Pleasant and in West Virginia, and really all throughout the Ohio River Valley, you know, during the before, after, and during the Mothman sightings in Point Pleasant, people are also reporting those same things around Lake Michigan and have been for some time. And so the biggest dissimilarity, I would say, would be that there's just no evidence right now of anything around Lake Michigan portending any kind of disaster. But again, I would argue that that's because Point Pleasant didn't have anything to do with portending any kind of disaster there either.
Now, you kind of bring up a point that is one of the things I definitely wanted to talk to you about in regard to these Lake Michigan sightings. I tend to take older sightings more seriously in some ways than I do newer sightings of almost anything, because now we are so immersed in popular culture, whether it be movies, books, the internet, whatever, television, that, you know, it's kind of like the alien gray, you know, movies start coming out with alien grays and then everybody's seeing alien grays. Now, personally, I believe there is something to UFOs, and I think people have had experiences, so I'm not poo-pooing them, but I do think there's a real, real problem investigating this stuff, because now people think E.T. is supposed to, you know, be about 4 foot tall, be gray, and have big eyes, and a slit for a mouth. So it kind of calls into question anytime someone says, I saw that. So is there good reason to think that this wave of Lake Michigan sightings is more than just an urban legend?
In my experience, yes. The reason for that is, now, I mean, I've been speaking to witnesses myself. This isn't second or third hand. This is speaking directly to people who have seen something very unusual, something that has left a definite, deep impression on them. Like, these people are scared, Jim, frankly. And you can tell. And most of these people, with whom I speak, have a relatively common narrative surrounding their sighting experience, or really the events directly following it. So here's what often happens to people: they will have this impossible experience. They will see this winged humanoid with glowing red eyes that terrifies them half to death, and they will go and they want to tell somebody about it, right? And so they'll find a loved one, you know, maybe a spouse or a best friend or something, and they'll tell them, and they get laughed at. And you know, you and I have heard of Mothman, and other people in our weird circles have heard of Mothman. Normal people have not. Mothman doesn't have the same popularity. You know, it doesn't occupy the space in our cultural zeitgeist as, like, say, Bigfoot. Right. You know,
that's a good point. So,
yeah, and so these people will talk about it. They get laughed at, and they just shut up about it until, you know, maybe they do a little research on their own and they start, you know, Googling things on the internet. And next thing you know, they might come across a Singular Fortean Society or UFO Clearinghouse or Phantoms and Monsters, and they'll get a hold of one of us. And when they talk to me, one of the first things that I hear is, oh my God, I didn't have any idea that anybody else had seen this thing, let alone dozens of other sightings. And so there's this mixture of awe and relief when these people finally find somebody who will take them seriously. So, you know, some of it, you know, when you look at the internet and sort of how things spread on there, yeah, there could be an element of modern folklore, you know, some urban legend building, if you're looking at unsourced reports, you know, on like Reddit or something, or just any internet site where nobody has vetted the witness at all. But the ones that I'm reporting, I'm very clear about the level of contact that I've had with any witnesses, and that goes for Lon or Manuel or anybody else too. I think it's very important to be very upfront about that. But I can tell you, when you're talking to somebody who has had this experience themselves, and they have nothing to gain by this, they don't want their name out there. They're not asking for money. They're not trying to sell anything. And they're scared. They're worried about protecting their personal life. They're worried about protecting their career. They're worried about protecting themselves. Like, one of the things that I have encountered most often, actually, is the idea that talking about this thing is going to somehow summon it back into their lives, which for most of these people is the last thing in the world they want to have happen. So it all reads to me as being very authentic. Whatever they're experiencing, these people are really experiencing it.
Interesting. Now, I mean, there are many reports, and certainly I highly recommend that people pick up the book, The Lake Michigan Mothman, High Strangeness in the Midwest. However, can you share with us one, what you would consider classic story? Not that's old, it's only a couple of years ago, but one that really just kind of grabbed you and said, boy, there's something here, and wow, is it strange?
Absolutely. So, earlier in 2019, I almost said earlier this year. I forgot it was 2020. Jeez. In early 2019, February, actually, we received a report. I believe it first went to Lon, and then Lon contacted me because he thought that, you know, I should get down there and check it out. There's a man in Woodstock, Illinois, and this is so classic because the narrative of this man's sighting is sort of representative of what happens to people. You know, they have these sort of interrupted journeys. Like, nobody's ever setting out in their evening to see Mothman, you know? And so this guy had, he was just performing some mundane errand. Like, he had to run out to Walgreens and pick some stuff up. And he was headed home, and as he was passing the entrance to the Dewfield Pond Conservation Area, in the headlights of his car, he sees this huge bat-winged. I think he described the wings as being similar to a gargoyle, actually. So these large this huge creature with these large membranous wings, and you know, I talked to this guy myself, and Emily, that's my wife and partner with the Singapore Freudian Society. You know, Emily and I, of course, went down there and we met this guy. We met his wife. We've seen their house. They took us around to this sighting area, and these people are as real as it gets. You know, they had a lot to lose. You know, these are people with professional careers who don't need people knowing that there was a monster sighted or monster sighting associated with them, you know? And what was especially interesting is after we went down there and we met with them and we got to do that on-site investigation and everything. Well, people kept reporting stuff. Probably most interestingly was there was a man in a nearby parking lot. So what that initial witness had described was it was a fairly brief sighting. And so basically what he had seen was this huge creature with the gargoyle wings walk in front of his car across the street, out of the Dewfield Pond Conservation Area, across the street, between a house and this small tree line, and then it was gone. And so directly behind that house actually is the McHenry County Fairgrounds, and that's where this second witness said he saw something. And this second witness was scared enough that he called 911, and I was able to get a copy of the incident detail report of that phone call from the McHenry County Sheriff's Department. So that, if nothing else, tells us that this other guy, he really did call 911, and people don't just do that,
right?
You know, that's not something people do lightly usually. So whatever he saw, you know, he was scared enough that he wanted to get the sheriff's department there and involved. You know, of course, the sheriff's department didn't find a monster, unfortunately, but they showed up. They took it seriously.
Now, let me ask you this. Do people say that the creature or their descriptions, are they very consistent? Are they very different? In general, is there like a profile of what Mothman looks like and what Mothman acts like?
They can be very different. Now, I think that not everybody who has contacted us has seen the exact same thing. I talk about this in the book. I try not to dwell on it a ton because, you know, people get, I guess I don't want to say bored, but they're more interested in the paranormal stuff. So some of these sightings are almost certainly of large migratory birds. And, you know, like great blue herons, for instance. And those sightings tend to be misidentified as like either a large bat or sometimes like a human in a wingsuit, weirdly enough. And I don't say that lightly. You know, if I didn't have firm evidence that corroborated my opinion that was happening, like photographic evidence where somebody had mistaken a great blue heron for a giant bat and a guy in a wingsuit, I wouldn't even be saying it. But so you have that, and then you have the paranormal sightings, and those are relatively consistent. There is some variation. I mean, and that variation can be fairly dramatic, I think. So you've got everything from a thinner sort of bat-like winged humanoid, often with red eyes, and then something very, very similar to that that has been described to me as having just being completely hairless, and even having like scaly skin. And then you've got like in Woodstock, for instance, that particular witness described what he had seen as being almost like a hairy humanoid, you know, almost like a Bigfoot with huge membranous gargoyle wings. And so there is some variation. I think some of it can be explained by the normal variation you would expect, just from, you know, human perspective, frankly. Some of it is a little beyond that. You know, I struggle sometimes with what exactly to make of the difference between, you know, say a winged Bigfoot and a flying humanoid with no discernible arms and glowing red eyes, for instance.
I would not want to run into one of those in a dark alley.
I don't want to run into any of it. Sure.
That's right. That's right. I'm with you. Do you feel Mothman is evil or has a sinister motive or makeup?
Well, I will say this. Now, fear in the paranormal sightings, fear is one of the strongest components of those sightings. And often also in those sightings, I will have witnesses who will literally describe, unprompted, feeling a palpable sense of evil. And so I don't know if that comes from them just being afraid and correlating fear with evil. But I will say that, I have to say that it's possible because fear is definitely a part of this. And people do describe that sense of evil. And, you know, in my opinion, anything that seems to be purposely provoking that level of fear and terror in people can't have anything but malevolent intent, you know?
Do you think that Mothman is tied in with other paranormal activity? You kind of hinted at that. And to me, I include cryptids in the paranormal. I know sometimes people say, well, the paranormal, you're just talking about ghosts, which drives me insane.
It drives me crazy, too.
It's like, no, because I started my original show, the Paranormal Podcast, in 2005. Right. And in at that time, to me, the paranormal meant all of it. Fortiana. Yeah. And all of a sudden it's become defined as, oh, you hunt ghosts. But anyway, which is unfortunate. But do you think there is a link to other paranormal phenomena?
Well, I definitely think that there is a lot of it that correlates. You know, whether that represents any kind of causal relationship, you know, isn't something that I could say with any certainty. But the fact that we do have other phenomena happening in the same areas would, I think, pretty reasonably allow for somebody to pursue that at least as a line of investigation. Sometimes in these sightings too, you know, you'll have more direct associated like paranormal phenomena, be that, you know, maybe a psychic experience or, you know, sometimes people will report elements of a haunting that just kind of pops up right after they've had their sighting. So, yeah, there does seem to be some correlative relationship or elements between paranormal phenomena here.
Yeah, very, very interesting indeed. Now, do the sightings continue to this day? Is it something that is a point of your continuing research? Has it kind of tailed off? Where are we at today?
No, sightings do continue. You know, most recently we've had a spate of sightings right around the end of last year. So, you know, within a month of now. Around the O'Hare International Airport and Rosemont, like that area, sort of on the periphery of Chicago. And so, you know, I don't think that now that the cat's sort of out of the bag and people are finally talking about this stuff, I don't think it's going to go anywhere, you know, because I don't think it ever did. I don't think it ever stopped after Point Pleasant. I just think people stopped talking about it, frankly. And now that we are, and now that we have the means that we do to reach people, I don't think there's likely to be any end in sight.
Well, certainly a fascinating topic, and if you are interested in Mothman, I think you certainly should pick up the Lake Michigan Mothman, High Strangeness in the Midwest. It is the latest book by Tobias Whalen. Tobias, where can people find this book and also connect with all of the work that you do?
Sure. So if you're interested in the Lake Michigan Mothman, you can go to Amazon and just type Lake Michigan Mothman into the search bar there, or you can go to singularfortean.com, which is the website for the Singular Fortean Society, and you can find our books page at singularfortean.com/books. Of course, our website is a great way to keep up with everything we're doing and the latest in paranormal news. Or if you are on any social media platform, so are we. So you can find the Singular Fortean Society on Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, and Instagram.
Great, Tobias. It's been a real pleasure to speak with you, and I hope we can talk to you again about other projects and other exciting things that you're doing, and really appreciate your time today.
That sounds great. Thank you very much.
And thank you for tuning in to the Cryptid Report, and be careful, because who knows, there might be a Mothman out there. We'll talk to you next time. Have a great week, everybody.